Good morning. We have a good crowd as usual, and we are very grateful for that. We have several that are visiting with us, which is also a very usual occurrence, and we are grateful for that as well. We hope and pray that more than anything else, that you will have already seen and will continue to see God glorified by what we do here today. That if you go away from here, learning a little bit more about God and seeing God a little bit better and knowing God a little bit better, then we would have accomplished what we desire to do. It's our desire together that we might encourage each other as we offer up our praise to Him. Thank you for being here. Excuse me. In the 1870s, in a old West town called Truckee, California, they built a jail. And this just wasn't any jail. This was a wonder to behold in that day. The walls were 32 inches thick. The ceiling on the jail was made of plate steel, insulated with dirt, and then lined with narrow gauge railroad beams. So no windows in the jail with the exception of a very small vent at the top of each cell, just to allow air to get in and out. And it was a quite expensive jail. 19 citizens in that town donated $25 apiece to build that jail. As it turned out, it cost more than that. It ended up costing $1,200 in order to complete it. $1,235, I think, was what it cost to build the jail, which was a lot of money in that time. But that was also a lot of jail for that time. And the reason they built it was because it was not at all uncommon in the late 1800s in the Old West for there to be many jailbreaks of those that were incarcerated. They could only build them so strongly. They didn't have the money to build maximum security jails like this one that was built. And so there were no recorded breaks ever from that jail. Only reason I mention that is because I think that's interesting. You wonder, could it have held the apostles? Well, that would depend on whether God wanted them in there or didn't want them in there. We understand that because you read great stories in the Bible, like in Acts chapter 12, where James has been killed by Herod, and James, the brother of John, has been killed. And he saw that that made the Jews really happy when he had James killed. And so he had Peter arrested. And it says that Peter was arrested in Acts chapter 12, and he was put in prison with the intent of Herod was not going to do anything till after the Passover. But he put him in prison, and he put him shackled to a couple of different soldiers between two of them. There were sentries at the door, and he assigned a guard of four squads of soldiers to watch Peter. So I just want you to think about that, and probably that was more of a cave in some way of securing that off. But four squads of guards, you now chain him. It says he was bound in chains to two different guards. So that's the way you're going to have to sleep while you're in prison. And they've got sentries at all the doors so that nobody can get out. And about midnight, it says that an angel came. And the chains were loosed. I love that description. It says, you know, so he whacked Peter on the side. It was like, get up. You know, we're going somewhere. And he said, you know, get your clothes on and put your cloak on. We're leaving. Put your sandals on. We're walking out. Peter didn't know what was going on. It says Peter didn't understand. Was this a dream? Was he having a vision? Was this actually happening? And because they get up from between the two guards. Nobody else is waking. And Peter starts to walk out. And Peter's just following this angel. And it says, and they get, and they just walk out the doors. The doors are opened for them. They get to the gate of the city, and the gate of the city just opens up for them. And about the time they get to the end of the street, the angel leaves. And Peter recognizes that he, in fact, is free, even though Herod would have had him probably killed. So he goes back to where all the others were. And this, you know, the story isn't necessarily any less amusing some of its aspects when you get to that point, because he gets back there, you remember, and he knocks on the door, and a servant girl, Rhoda, comes out, and she sees Peter, and she's so excited, she doesn't even open the gate. She runs back to tell the other disciples. And so she's saying, Peter's at the gate. It tells us in the beginning of that chapter, they had all been praying for him. praying that this happened. And now Peter's at the gate, and you remember what they told her? They said, "You're nuts. You've lost your mind, woman. What are you thinking?" And they said, maybe it's his angel. Let's go see. And they were shocked. God had freed Peter from prison. That was not a difficult thing. You couldn't build a prison that if God didn't want you freed, that he couldn't free you. It wasn't an issue of what man desired, any of that. And I want us to look not at that story, but at one that comes just a little while after that in Acts chapter 16. As we look at a lesson that we are entitling, Sharing the Gospel with the Enemy. So as we think about those that we share the gospel with, as we think about our drive to be the neighbor that is proclaiming Christ to the people around us, and I will just put in a little bid for all those preachers that are going to be here throughout the summer while we're right here. Our summer series starts June 6th when we move from Wednesday to Thursday nights. From June through the third week in August, we'll meet on Thursdays, not Wednesdays, and we've got 11 different men coming to speak to us from different areas of Texas and talking to us about our theme, who is my neighbor, and what are all the different applications of that. And so I would strongly encourage you to be here for that as we continue to try and reach out for their encouragement, for your encouragement, for our stimulation, as the writer of Hebrews says, gathering together serves the purpose of being able to stir one another up to the things that we ought to be doing. Would encourage you strongly to be here for that. So as we look at Acts chapter 16, we're going to find on this occasion Paul and Silas in prison. And they're in prison because they've been preaching and teaching the truth, and that would have caused them enough problems, but it got worse because there was a woman that was following them that was constantly, she was possessed, and she was constantly yelling things and testifying behind him. It says Paul eventually just got annoyed with that. And so he turned around and he cast the demon out of her. And it says immediately it came out. And so you'd think, yes, everybody's excited. Everybody's jumping for joy, except those that were using her. That time wasn't any different than now. She had this affliction. She was possessed by this demon. And there were others that took advantage of that. And they were making money off of it. And when they cast the demon out, all of a sudden, those who were making money said, now what are we going to do? Our source of income is gone. And so they bring Paul and Silas up on charges saying, you know what, they're teaching people to follow customs that are against our customs and against our laws. They're doing things that are not at all in fitting with Roman law and what we stand for. And all the people around them are agreeing with them. And so the magistrates, it says, strip them, beat them, and then cast them in prison. And so that's where we find them, Paul and Silas in prison. And so I want you to think about a few things with me in regards to that in Acts chapter 16. Read with me if you would, if you want to turn there, Acts chapter 16. We're going to pick up after they've already offended those that were making money off of the woman, and after they were cast into prison. Because as you pick up in verse 22 of chapter 16, after the crowd joined in and attacked them, the magistrates stripped their garments and beat them with rods. And when they had inflicted many blows upon them, they threw them in prison, ordering the jailer to keep them safely. Having received this order, he put them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in stocks. So this is not the way most people are in prison today that we picture. Again, Peter was chained between two guards. Now they cast them in and they're shackling their feet up. They're the inner prison, so it's kind of like the hole they've been put into, the dungeon of dungeons, if you will. Guard is keeping watch over them, and they've been shackled. Their feet are in the stocks. And then we read, about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. The prisoners were listening to them, and suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken. And immediately all the doors were opened, and everyone's bonds were unfastened. When the jailer woke and saw that the prison doors were open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself, supposing that the prisoners had escaped. But Paul cried with a loud voice, "Do not harm yourself, for we are all here." And the jailer called for lights and rushed in, and trembling with fear, he fell down before Paul and Silas. And then he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" So we'll stop there for just a minute. So let's just picture that scene, if you will. So they've been arrested, it tells us, and they've been imprisoned up through verse 24. But then it tells us while they're in prison, there's an incredible earthquake. You just got this big earthquake. And so imagine that you're Paul and Silas even. The earthquake happens and the stocks break open. The doors all open up. Everything is just totally wide open. And you're now in a different circumstance than you were before. If he understood that which had happened with Peter earlier, there might even be in Paul's mind, you know what? We're going to get a chance. We're just going to walk out of here now. This is going to work very well for us. You may have thought in those kind of terms. But you've got a distraught jailer. Think about the jailer. What's happened to him? All of a sudden, your whole job is to watch these prisoners, and there's this earthquake, and all of a sudden, you wake up, and all the doors are open. All the chains are loose. It says he's going to take his sword. He's going to kill himself. Why? He assumed probably better to kill himself than it was to have the Roman government kill him. That's what they would have done. If all these prisoners had escaped, then he would have lost his life. And he thought, the one job I was given to do, I didn't do. And so he pulls out his sword. Can't you just envision that? Pulls out his sword and is getting ready to thrust himself through because of what has happened. And Paul yells out, "Don't harm yourself. None of us have left." Imagine the jailer when you hear that. Wow, really? Everybody's still here? The doors are all open, the chains are all loosened, and everybody's still here? And so he doesn't. He puts his sword back up. He's not going to kill himself. Then you've got not only a distraught jailer saved by Paul physically, you've got a penitent jailer that's going to be saved by God. He says, what do we need to do? What must I do to be saved? Does that not seem like a little bit of an odd question based on the circumstances? Well, I think there's some things that God would have us to understand. Here's some questions that I would have in regards to that. One, why is this story here? Do you ever ask yourself that? God didn't record everything that happened. We know that. He didn't even record everything that Jesus did or said. John specifically said, you couldn't record all that was done. Can you imagine the size of the book if you recorded everything that was done and everything that was said? He says you couldn't do that. So God selects certain things to tell us. And we understand that. He did that throughout the scriptures, Old and New Testament. Think of all the things that happened in Old Testament times that he doesn't talk about. Because he was trying to follow, or he was following, the stories that would lead us from creation to the Christ. That was the whole goal. And so that's why you follow some lineages differently than you do others. And some storylines, God's taking us from one place to another. Everything he puts in the scriptures, he puts there for a reason. It's not just randomly there. I think he wants us to understand some things. And then, why were Paul and Silas in prison? I understand the first answer to that question is because they'd been cast there, because they had cast out this demon and they'd upset the people that were making money. But God could have prevented that as well, could he not? There was more than once they wanted to kill Jesus, and yet they did not. Why? Because it wasn't time for Jesus to die yet. God was still in control. Why were they there? It wasn't only an issue of what they had done. I think the story is there, and God has got them in prison there so that he can have this story for us so that we can learn something from that. And I hope you see what, at least for me, I see in this to help me understand something about what we do. The jailer, just think about him for a minute. Who is this guy? I'm saying, if you're Paul and Silas, who is this guy? This a friend? This is no friend. This guy is the guy that has the job of keeping you in prison. That's his whole job, to keep you locked up in the stocks. He's not concerned with your comfort. He's not concerned with anything else. He's not just there visiting. Do you think he came in and loosened their chains? He's binding their wounds, bandaging their wounds and taking care of them. No, why? Is he sitting down with them and praying with them? I don't think so. This is a man who's a jailer And what does he think about Paul? You ever wonder? I mean, they are his prisoners. They are not his friends. He regards them as criminals. Paul and Silas could say, look, we really didn't even do the things that they said we did. And that would be true. They had not done the things that they were accused of doing. They had cast out a demon, but they hadn't done the things they were accused of doing, of causing riots and all the other things that were associated with disobeying the Roman law. What do you think the jailer would have thought? You think that's the first time he's heard that story? Hey, we're here wrongfully charged. Talk to those people who go in and visit with people in the prison and have ministries where they're going in and meeting. You realize there's almost nobody guilty in all our prisons? It's pretty incredible. There's a claim of innocence. And this jailer would have heard this before. He thought, you're in prison because you're guilty and you deserve to be in prison and I'm going to keep you here. That certainly would have been his attitude. Did Paul and Silas not understand this? They understood that. They could be thinking, how unfair. All we did was preach the gospel. All we did is cast out a demon. And we're here and you've got us in these chains and you're guarding us and won't let us out no matter what we say. They had every reason to despise this man. Every reason. And yet, it's an unusual story. Because in Acts 12, God just woke Peter, shone a light, walked Peter out of the prison. Because that's what he needed for Peter. And that's what he needed to accomplish his will. But that's not what he needed in Acts chapter 16. Something different happens, and I think there was a reason that Paul and Silas were in prison. You remember Paul said on a later occasion, when he was in prison, he said, you know what? There were guards, Roman guards, that got to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ because I was in prison. God was able to use me right here in these circumstances. This story, I think, helps us to understand you really can't control your circumstances. And you don't even know the outcome of your circumstances, what they're going to be. It isn't that God was letting Paul and Silas know, hey, you're going to prison, but here's what's going to happen. You have no idea where it's going to go. The key is, do I understand that no matter what circumstance I am in, that I can maintain the right focus so that I can use any opportunity to help somebody understand about God? How hard is it to share the gospel with somebody who's in the role of this jailer if you're Paul or Silas? How hard is that? I mean, this isn't your next door neighbor that you might have some disagreements with, but for the most part, you're friendly. It's not a family member. Not somebody who's intimately involved in your life in any fashion. And yet, it's going to be one of the great stories in the whole New Testament, I think, about the sharing of and the responding to the gospel of Jesus Christ. So as we think about that, sharing the gospel, really? Why would Paul do that? Why would Silas do that under these circumstances? Because I think they understood some things. I just want you to look at three verses with me, and I've got them projected so you don't have to turn to them for the sake of time, but Paul understood what he later wrote in Romans chapter 3. Everybody has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Everybody. There's nobody that's in a different boat than this jailer is in that sense. Every single person is undeserving of the grace that God has extended because every person is guilty of sin. Secondly, in Colossians chapter 1, he says, once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. He said, that's where you used to be. You had sinned, everybody has sinned, and you used to be alienated from God. You were separated from God. And why were you separated from God? Because of your life. It wasn't what God did. It's what we did. He says you were alienated. You were enemies of God. You stood opposed to God. Because why? You were more interested in yourself than you were anything else. That's the nature, truly, of most sin, is it not? That prior to coming to Jesus Christ, Mark ruled Mark's life. Paul said the same thing. But once coming to Jesus Christ, Paul said Christ ruled his life, and that's the way it needs to be with each of us. He wrote in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. He says, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sin, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. Among them, we too all formerly lived in the lust of our flesh." That's Paul speaking. He said, every one of us, that's where we were when we were apart from God. "Indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." Paul says, everybody was in the same boat. Everybody. And he understood that. And that's critical to understand. That no matter who we're looking at, that they're not in any different boat than anybody else in the world has ever been in. In the sense of, all have been alienated from God. And so now, Paul has his big chance. Big chance. Big chance to do what? I would tell you, Paul has a great chance to repay the kindness of God. Paul was going house to house, casting Christians into prison, standing by as they stoned Stephen and holding the cloaks of those who are doing the stoning. He wreaked havoc on God's people. And he knew that. He said he was insolent. He was violent. That's what he says about himself. He was a blasphemer. He was the chiefest of sinners. That's his descriptions of himself. He understood that. And Jesus Christ appeared to him on the road to Damascus because Jesus had a role for Paul. And he appeared to him, struck him blind. And Paul goes in to town and waits for Ananias to come and tell him what he needs to do. And he's baptized into Christ. He's forgiven of his sins. And he understands. Wow. What kind of God is this that would do that for me when I stood as far away from him as I was? Paul understood. Now's my chance. God has done incredible things for me. And I would tell you, that was always the motivating factor for Paul in what he did. He helps us to understand it's not about what's been done to us. It's all about what's been done for us. It really doesn't matter what your circumstances in life are in that sense. Is there any circumstance in life that can possibly be more negative than God giving his own son for you is positive? Is there anything on the negative side that could balance that out, that could sway that to mean less than it does? He gave his only begotten son. It's not about what's been done to me, what's happening to me, what the circumstances are, what will become of them. All of the apostles didn't get out of prison every time they were in. That didn't work that way. James was killed. He didn't always free them, but if there's an opportunity to serve God, that's what they saw. What do we need to do? Just two things I want you to think about this morning. Two things that we need to do. One, we need to make it obvious who we belong to. That was the first thing Paul and Silas did in prison here. I don't know if you ever thought about it. It says they were beaten with many blows. I actually hate reading passages like that. Can you even sense any idea of the pain that some of these people went through when they were tortured by those around them? Clothes ripped off of them and beaten with many blows, cast into prisons, shackled. And then what? I don't know what they sang, but it says they did. in prison, in shackles, and they did what? They were singing. Can't you just picture? I know they didn't have our songs. Can't you just picture Paul and Silas sitting there singing something like, "Our God is an awesome God"? Those kinds of things. Can't you see them singing things that are praising the name of God while they're in prison? And who heard that? It says the others were listening. People were hearing them sing about their God. They're in the most adverse circumstances. There was no question at all in the minds of the other people what Jesus must have meant to these men. No question. We need to show the world. They need to see in us how much Jesus means to us. They see that in the things that we say, the things that we do, the places that we go, the things that we listen to, the things that we watch, whatever the case may be. They need to see how much Jesus means to us. We need to be obvious. We need to be bold, need to be unashamed, unapologetic for who we are. If we are followers of God and Jesus Christ, then we need not to be ashamed to stand out in the world and let people know. It doesn't matter if you think that's right or wrong to the world. I'm saying it doesn't matter what they think. I need to stand boldly for God and who He is and what He is and what He stands for. Unashamed, unapologetic. I don't apologize because I'm a Christian. We need to stand strong for God. But secondly, need not only to make obvious who we belong to, it needs to be obvious who we care about. I look at a passage like that and I think, if the doors had busted open and all the chains had fallen off because of this big earthquake, I wonder how fast I could have gotten to the front door. You ever think something like that? And the fact that the guard was going to kill himself, it's like, that's just doubly beneficial. Who's going to stop me now? The guard's about to kill himself. Paul says, don't do that. Don't do that. You're too important. You're too valuable to God for me to let you just do that. Don't harm yourself. We are all here. Just think about the jailer. I mean, his whole world has been shaken, has it not? Everything that he is and everything that he does has been, in a moment's time, has been absolutely thrown into this state where he has no idea if life is even worth living. Absolutely in a moment of time. And yet Paul said, don't do it. We didn't leave. We didn't leave. People need to understand. Did Paul owe this man anything? This is the guy watching him in prison. Did Paul owe him anything? Yes, he did. It's a trick question. I understand Paul didn't owe him anything the way that we think. But Paul said, you want to know why I preach the gospel? Because I'm under compulsion to do so. Not because God forced him to do it. Paul said, how could I receive the saving grace of God, being the man that I was, and not understand I have an obligation to try to help others find that same saving grace? Paul did owe him. He owed God, but because he owed God, he owed others. That's what God wants us to understand. We are incredibly indebted for what he has done for us. We've got a debt we can't ever pay. But we should be like Paul, under compulsion, to do what we can to show the world how much we care about our God. Don't harm yourself. He says, we're all here. We care about you. And then I love the end of this story. Because that's all Paul said. The next part of the conversation came from whom? Who sought out who? In this. I love this. Paul didn't say, don't harm yourself. Let me tell you about Jesus Christ. He said, don't harm yourself. The man said, what must I do to be saved? You think that singing didn't make a difference? The praying that Paul and Silas would have been doing didn't make a difference? the behavior of these men didn't make a difference. The witness of being able to see God with these people and how their life had changed and what was happening. Remember, that's why we're told. Be ready to give an answer. Why? Because there's going to be a question. Somebody, if we're out there boldly standing for God, somebody, maybe not lots, but somebody is going to want to know why. What's it all about? Why do you do that? Why do you feel that way? Why do you live that way? He says that's when we need to be ready to give an answer. People will seek out the truth when they see lives changed by the truth. And I think that's a part for me of this story. That whatever the circumstances may be. I mean, Paul was in prison. I don't know where I'll be. But it's almost like back in the story of Esther, isn't it? How do you know? How do you know that the very reason you're here is not because? And so God doesn't tell me specifically. But I would tell you, there's just as good a chance that Paul and Silas were in prison in order to reach out to the jailer as for any other reason. How do they know? Paul didn't, but he took the opportunity. The same way was the teaching in Esther. You don't know. You don't know, but maybe you're here for this very reason. If that could even be the case, then take advantage of the reason. Why are you here today? Well, we have our reasons for coming. Why did we hear this lesson? I don't know. I'm not saying God came to me this week and said, Mark, here's the lesson I want you to present. But God moves in lives, and maybe he's touched a life this morning. That may be the case. And if you need to make things right with God, we would love to be able to help you do that. We have a baptistry here. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and wanted to be baptized based on that belief, if you're confessing him as your Lord, willing to live for him and rather than yourself, he says you can do that and be raised in newness of life. Maybe you've already done that. But maybe you've started to stray away. Maybe you're getting weak. Maybe you need prayers. Maybe you need help. If there's anything at all we can do for you to help you today, let us know while we stand, while we sing.